philosophy.
It's Tacky Talk time on this Friday to check in with the State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for another update. Hey, Tacky.
Hey, Joe. It's good to see you on the 20th. It's 7 days after the Friday the 13th, and we're still here.
Yes, if we can survive Friday the 13th during this year, we can survive anything.
Pretty much at this point. Pretty much.
So, some bad luck, unfortunately, is with the pandemic, numbers are going the wrong way.
Yeah, as you've probably all seen in the news, I mean, we're going to 2,000 per day. Hospitalizations have gone up. The governor, his press conference, has informed people that 75% capacity at the hospitals. Obviously, every hospital is different, but the average capacity is 75%. It's not all COVID-related patients. It is people that needed procedures done, as well as COVID patients, which is troublesome. I do know they segregate the units also as COVID and non-COVID units. But if people have a medical emergency and we have more COVID patients, that's challenging. And the COVID patients coming are getting younger. The average age this time of COVID patients is, I think, closer to 62, as opposed to it was 82 at the beginning of COVID. And I think you've seen the reports. Younger people are spreading the disease. They tend to be asymptomatic. You saw in the news, we've had incidents at the State House again.
Yeah, I think there were 7 positive cases most recently.
Yeah, the House had 3 members, the Senate had 1 member, and a handful of other staffers have got COVID. Not everyone got COVID at the State House, so I'd like to let people know that. People brought COVID to the State House from other places. They were asymptomatic, a few of them, some of them were not, but more than a few, well, not more, that's not a correct statement. I mean, you know, I think it was like 7, I think 2 were symptomatically visibly and the remainder were not. To my knowledge, you know, there's a lot of HEPA stuff, so I don't know exact details of people's medical conditions, but I mean, it's more like, you know, people talking about stuff, and it sounds like, based on some observations from folks, that some people were symptomatic, but yeah. Most were not. So again, you know, you don't have to have, you gotta be sneezy or running nose or coughing to spread the disease. You know, your respiratory droplets with no symptoms or prior to symptoms occurring is still contagious.
Yeah, in fact, I looked, you know, I was curious about that. So I looked it up this morning, actually, what is the actual percentage of people who are asymptomatic as opposed to symptomatic? It is something like 20 to 40% of people with coronavirus are asymptomatic, show no symptoms of it whatsoever. That's a huge number.
It is. It is. And one of the weird psychological effects of this, and we talked about my, you know, anxieties and things like that before, is because now you have to be very cautious and somewhat concerned about the people around you for hurting you unintentionally without knowing it. That's what makes this very scary and why the mask is so important to keep your respiratory droplets to yourself. So the person next to you may look perfectly healthy and could be a carrier. And the person gets too close and breathes on you for an extended period of time, or perhaps has a dry cough. It is winter. People get a dry cough. It's not because you're sick. You get a little bit of dust in your throat because of the dry air. You know, respiratory droplets come at you rapidly. So, and that person could be no symptoms and just gave you the disease, and then you're now symptomatic. You don't know what happened. And it's very unnatural. I mean, we're social people, and we generally are not afraid of each other. Quincy is a very tight-knit community. People are very, very friendly here. And the idea that I have to be more cautious and, you know, depending on, you know, people's situation on their health, somewhat fearful of people around you is very unnatural for us.
Yeah, and the governor is quite concerned, of course, with Thanksgiving coming up. But it appears that some people, at least, are going to be traveling and having gatherings, and he's really worried about a spike. I talked to the health commissioner, Ruth Jones, earlier this week. She has the same concerns, and just almost it sounds like it's going to be a given that there's going to be a spike after the holiday.
It's what happened in Canada. They had their Thanksgiving back, I believe, in October. It's their Thanksgiving Day. And shortly afterwards, they had a monstrous spike everywhere in their provinces as a result of the holiday. So, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, crammed together. I know a lot of families pick one or the other holiday to see family. Most often is Thanksgiving because it's the most heavily traveled day. with ourselves, I mean, we're seeing if there's a decent weather day, we'll have lunch outside, social distance around the fire pit. If there is a good weather day, if not, then we'll just talk on, you know, video. And my brother only lives 3 blocks away, and do it that way. But, you know, we have no intention of having anybody else in the house at all. And I'll be doing the cooking because we've bunkered in so much that I'm fairly confident I'm very low risk. So there'll be a whole morning of cooking for our luncheon if we can find, hopefully, a good day next week to be outside.
Right. Yeah. It's just people just kind of have to realize it's not a normal year. You know, nothing about it is normal this year.
No. I mean, we have done some Zoom calls with my mom's siblings around the world, which is nice. And I mean, they're not doing anything normally either. You know, they do regular monthly or biweekly luncheons in Hong Kong. That's not happening. My mom still has aunts alive. They're in their 80s and 90s on high risk, and they're not, you know, going to put themselves out there, even though they're very able body at their age.
So let's talk a little bit about the promise of a vaccine. Just today, actually, Pfizer is applying for emergency FDA approval for their vaccine. So is that encouraging to you?
It is. It's very encouraging. I mean, I just got the email today from Pfizer. Moderna is heading closer to that as well. My understanding is that other countries are still also working towards that. If they want to use their vaccines in the U.S., they need FDA approval. I think it's important for people to realize that there's vaccine all over the world being made, but every country has different standards on vaccine safety. So, you know, you may be reading about stuff coming to China and Russia and England, but they still have to meet our standards. So the fact we have two U.S. companies that know the FDA process is very helpful. But again, there are some challenges. Pfizer appears to be, doesn't appear, it's a very, vaccine has to be stay in refrigeration. It is in your fridge at home. I mean, it's negative 94 zone refrigeration. UPS is making a lot of these boxes. It's going to be very expensive when you think about refrigeration and boxes and two doses and so forth. Moderna's temperature is much more room temperature. But again, it's dosage manufacturing. So if you have to create two doses and you have 360 million people or so in the U.S., that's 360 million times two. So that's 720 million doses. You have to somehow get that into people's arms within 24 days of each other on each dose. That's a lot of, you know, that means you have to have 720 needles, 720 alcohol pads, 720 million pairs of gloves. And there's a glove storage worldwide. Half the gloves I found out was made in Malaysia. Hmm. And they're having a supply chain problem because of COVID too. So while I'm very optimistic on this, and we should be very happy that, you know, they're going to make hundreds of millions of vaccines and hopefully get 20 to 50 million done hopefully by the spring in terms of manufacturing, if they get FDA approval, which I suspect they will. And they will continue a clinical trial test. This is not over in testing and data. I think people should be aware. This is not just, oh, we made a vaccine and they walk away. They continue to do data collection because a lot of the folks that have not had a chest test are younger people.
Right.
The 25 and below age bracket has not had much clinical testing. They prioritize older generation of people, folks. So, you know, but think about it. You need 720 million sets of everything to administer a dose in the U.S. Just the U.S.
Staggering. It's probably the largest humanitarian vaccination effort in the history of the world, I would venture to say.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even, you know, getting the measles vaccine out took decades. And we're still doing it globally. I mean, people still being inoculated for measles on a global level. And most recently, you know, we have the chickenpox vaccine, which also took a decade to put out. Mm-hmm. Now the shingles vaccine, if you've seen commercials, if you're older, shingles can kill you.
Yep.
Shingles, very dangerous. But there's also a shingles vaccine out now, too, that they try to encourage people to take. So, unlike other vaccines, because of the nature of the spread of this particular disease, more people have died of this in the U.S. in 1 year than Vietnam and Korea wars combined.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the highest death rate, a total number of Americans, more than two major military conflicts. And even where we had the Spanish flus and the other flus in the past, I mean, nothing in terms of death rate was like this in a single year. So people need to put that kind of perspective.
Put it into context, right, just to understand how serious and dangerous it is. How concerned are you, Tacky, about the lack of guidance from the federal government due to the holdup of the transition to power process?
Well, I think everyone getting mixed messages, and, you know, I do get those emails and see social media, even talk to people in the street. I think everyone hears all these mixed messages, and this is the failure of the federal government to provide a consolidated and single message for all of us about what we should be doing, as well as consolidating information to all of us about what's going on and stand united on a single message with healthcare and science professionals that this is the way we got to move through this. On a good front, I mean, federalism gives the states the ability to take a role when the feds seem to fail or have failed, in this case, in my mind. And Governor Baker and the legislature and cities and towns and you and the public have done a overly very good job on following healthcare protocols and to follow the guidelines that the governors put out through emergency orders. While the cases have gone up, and it is staggering, I don't want to underscore that, but you know, this could have been a lot uglier. We could have looked more like April. And if we continue to flatten the curve, because that's what this is weird. It's been a flat curve. It's not going down fast enough, but it's flattened the curve. And maybe we'll be able to keep this curve from rising any further and hopefully bring it down as we go along, as we continue to be aware and don't let our guard down.
We talk a little bit about the economy and the fact that there might be a state budget pretty soon.
Yeah, we at the Senate completed their state budget. We've done ours. We'd like to get our budget to the governor's desk after Thanksgiving. But it looks like we probably do a two-week temporary budget going to December to do that. You know, a lot of the money that we're put in there is COVID-related money. It's not just healthcare. You know, housing issues, food security issues, Medicare, Medicaid, our mass health programs going up by $1.6 billion, which is, you know, results squeezing out some other parts of the budget and programs, unfortunately. But we got a balanced budget out. We have a 6.2% shortfall was our latest projection. It was closer to 18% in April. So not good, but not April, right. As I would like to put it. But we were able to close that hole with a combination of federal money and state rainy day fund and some cost savings here and there and some transfers of last year's capital gains tax that was supposed to go to rainy day fund. So we transferred those into this year. As well, that, you know, we get it, move it from any day directly to next this year's budget. So we were able to close the gap. But at the same time, I mean, there is a little bit of hurt on some programs as we direct a lot of our energy into COVID-related impacts. FY22, I think it's going to be hard. We're going to start that budget process in January.
Yeah.
And the public should be aware that FY22 is when we feel the full impacts of COVID, because a lot of the impacts was felt during the months of June and July, and our fiscal year starts on July 1st. So FY22, we'll see the entire impact of 2020 and 21, going into July 1st, 2021, that move forward, we're gonna feel exactly how bad it has been. I'm not gonna say it was good at all. It's gonna be bad.
Yeah, and that of course is assuming that things are starting to improve at that point with the pandemic.
And you all saw with even partial reopenings, it took time to get their businesses up and going, whether it be a restaurant or retail, or even service-based. So the expectation that, you know, we have a vaccine, it's distributed out over the course of a year, hopefully within 1 year, given the volume we have to give, and that you get our businesses and our economy somewhat back to normal. It isn't as simple as flipping a switch and suddenly people can just open their business. There'll be some still COVID protocols during the vaccination period. And once we get to about 99% vaccination, we have now achieved what we call herd immunity. So, you know, just because, you know, people think, oh, we're going to be all set, you're not all set. And also, by the way, vaccination isn't the same as a cure in the sense that if you catch COVID, we give you a vaccine and suddenly you're cured. You know, that's a therapy, vaccine and treatment.
Right. Vaccine will just hopefully prevent you from getting it. But if you do get it, you need to be treated for it.
Exactly. And this has to be done as a global level. So, you know, with the U.S. leading the way, you know, we still have the best education of biotech on the planet leading the way. I mean, the U.S. needs to be an international leader on COVID. This has been lacking in the current presidential administration. There is enormous debilitation on the world economy, of which the U.S. is the leader. And not to be biased, but I am a Democrat. You all know this. You know, under President Biden, you know, I'm hopeful that we will become a world leader again.
Yeah, President-elect has said that he intends to rejoin the World Health Organization. Do you think that's a good move?
Absolutely. The United States needs to lead. And, you know, one of my criticisms of the previous president is we stopped leading. And we're the biggest economy on the planet, we're the most highest education on the planet, we have the highest per capita on the planet, we have the highest production on the planet, on the ability to manufacture and put out stuff. I mean, we can activate manufacturing much faster than other places. And, you know, we've always been the leader since World War II ended. So not leading the UN, which is in New York for a reason, by the way, you know, that wasn't an accident why the UN's in New York, you know, establishes us as a world leader on all fronts. So, you know, joining WHO, making sure, you know, our voice is properly stamped on it. We're a major funder of the UN, which gives us a lot of ability to make our voice heard, especially in healthcare, in sciences, in climate change. You know, our voice is heard because we're the major supporter for the UN. You know, ensures that the world follows our lead, hopefully, on important issues that are life and death, which is COVID.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about a successful local story, Tacky, in Quincy Asian Resources? And I know you were part of their annual meeting earlier this week, and they're making leaps and bounds both here in Quincy and in New York as well.
Yes, I give a lot of credit to Philip Chong, the board of directors, the staff, and the volunteers who are moving through COVID. They're talking about various service agencies in Quincy. Everyone's had to really adjust. And Quincy Asian Resources, Corey, has done an incredible job pivoting in COVID. They were able to put people to work that got laid off by Brooks Brothers, which was a major partner for the last year and a half of workforce development, until they went bankrupt, and having to make PPE and working to get contracts with PPE. So if anybody's looking for a small moderate contract in PPE, definitely call Corey about if what they can provide you. And it's locally made. I mean, once again, we want to promote local stuff. I know the price competition can be a little trickier if it's locally made, but it's also keeping a workforce at home who's had to adjust to working at home manufacturing PPE. You know, in New York City, he was able to land over $2 million contract with the city for a meal delivery program as a result of the COVID emergency for food security, utilizing partners in Sunshine Travel, as well as using local restaurants. He had to go down there and find local restaurants to provide these foods, as well as also find other drivers. You know, he's able to make it work. And it's amazing how the city of Quincy has now impacted one of the biggest and most illustrious cities on the planet, in New York City. So there's a lot of credit there. He got some funding from the feds for citizenship programs. This is a big part of our mission there. And with virtual learning on ESL, we can do that. There's been discrimination conversations with Quincy students through the youth program. COVID-19 through, you know, gotta say it, Donald Trump, the president egging on racial divides, you know, has resulted in this, more of this ugliness on people of color, especially Asians and Chinese, regarding claiming that, you know, I gave you COVID, literally me. So they could actually, you know, had one of Quincy kids going to do one at Boston Latin School soon, with partnership with other folks. So, yeah, I mean, they've also been very conservative. I know they have a good reserve preparing for recession, but none of us could have prepared for this type of situation. And this is despite losing the three major fundraisers, which is the August Moon Festival, the Lunar Festival, and the annual award banquet. So, again, you know, everyone listening, if you have a couple extra dimes to spare, definitely think about donating to one of your local charitable groups in Quincy, whether it be, you know, Quincy's Resources or QCAP or the Y or Germantown or Interfaith or South Shore Stars, your community health centers, Manor Community Health or South Shore Community Health. any number of local organizations, Dove, another one, Domestic Violence, you know, you should consider, you know, a couple of bucks if you spare, definitely please consider donating.
Yeah, I just spoke with folks from Father Bill's earlier today, and they'll be delivering 1,000 meals on Thanksgiving, the most amount of meals ever delivered. They can't have their in-person Thanksgiving dinner that they normally do for obvious reasons, but they're stepping up to the plate, literally.
Yes, and I think that's kind of been underscored in Quincy, how much our service agencies, our religious organizations, and neighborhood groups have really stepped up to try to help each other out and to provide some degree of normality, even in the world we live in. I mean, you know, the Housing Community Council, I know, has been trying to do some virtual events and even some outdoor events during the summertime, trying to create some normality in terms of, like, you know, the different types of food drives and things like that. I know the Boy Scouts are still collecting bottles. Your Marymount Association, you know, did things like, you know, a drive-by neighborhood event as opposed to people getting out of their cars. I mean, just drive by and people would, you know, wave and do things like that as well. So I think what we're trying to do is just keep our spirits up. I know it can't be truly normal, but I think it's still important to maintain that connectionness that we talked about earlier, about the fact that we can't see people for Thanksgiving dinner in your home, but, you know, try to make sure that we're still a community that remembers each other.
Absolutely, yeah. Speaking of connectivity, how do folks connect with you, Jackie?
617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Call the office and just hit any staffer and they'll leave a message. We'll get it. Obviously, you can try to email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. My email has been getting calmer, so I'm thankful for that. So I'll more likely find your email easier right now for at least the short term until bill filing deadline starts to come up in January. and, of course, you know, my webpage at tacky.chan.org. We put resources up there as well as my Facebook site, State Representative Tacky Chan. So this Facebook information there, just keep scrolling. Maybe it's something useful there before you even call us.
All right. Appreciate the time. Good to talk to you. I want to wish you and your colleagues and your family a very happy, healthy Thanksgiving.
You too. Have a good Thanksgiving, good holiday. And so we're not going to see each other next week, I suspect. So I'll see you in the month of December.
That is correct. Yeah. And hopefully it won't be white. If anything, it'll be wet.
I'm hoping for a little bit of 50 degree weather. Let's
you go with that right through the winter. That'd be okay with me. Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you, Joe. Talk to you in a couple of weeks.